Right, good evening. So here we are on Rosh Chodesh Kislev, and the Parshat HaShavua, the third of the week, is coming Shabbat, is Toldot. And the discourse that I found is from Tavshin Yudalad, which is 1953. And it was said on the Shabbat of Toldot. Now that Shabbat was slightly earlier in the months than this one, because this Shabbat it will already be Kislev, whereas that Shabbat was Erev Rosh Chodesh Kislev, was the eve of Rosh Chodesh Kislev. However, today it is actually the night between the first and the second days of Rosh Chodesh Kislev. So the theme of the discourse is Lahavin Inyan Erev Rosh Chodesh V'Rosh Chodesh, to understand the concept of the eve of Rosh Chodesh and Rosh Chodesh. And many discourses begin with a verse from the Torah. In fact, usually they begin with a verse from the beginning of the Sedra, or from a verse within the Sedra. It's an interesting point whether the verses that they begin with are also in the classical Midrashim points of focus. You see, for example, Midrash Mechilta takes a few points within the Sedra as its starting point. And this relates to the idea also of there being a tri-annual cycle for reading the Torah, so as if within one Sedra you actually have 3 points to begin. So there may be some kind of correspondence with some of the Midrashim, some of the collections of Midrashim. And there's an interesting relationship between Midrash and Hasidic teachings in general, and Chabad Hasidic teachings in particular. But then, on other occasions, the discourse doesn't begin with the Pasuk. You see, the Pasuk, the verse, it's like a key which is opening a door. So sometimes it's not a Pasuk, it's not a verse. It might be something from the Mishnah. So a phrase from the Mishnah could also be this key. And sometimes it is Lahavin Inyan something, to understand something. And it's a very interesting collection. What are the Lahavin Inyan discourses in the Chabad tradition? There is a whole volume, which is a publication of manuscripts of Rabbi Shneur Zalman, the first Chabad Rebbe's teachings, all of which are Lahavin Inyan something, to understand such and such a topic. It's called Inyanim, topics. And so unlike most of his discourses which concern a verse from the Torah, these are on topics.
That's interesting, because I read about Tanya, and it actually says that many of the epistles, the letters that he wrote, they are organized according to theme and topic, even though chronologically there may be many, many years between them. So it kind of ties...
You mean so the way they're organized in the book
follows
some kind of...
So you may have one that's like written in 1795, followed by something that is like 1812.
Well, certainly they are disparate. They're not in chronological order.
Exactly.
That's certainly so.
Yeah.
The extent to which they're collected according to theme is interesting. I'm not sure I've ever noticed that, but it's certainly an interesting possibility. It's a point. Okay, so this focuses on the concept of Rosh Chodesh, and of course we're speaking of the lunar months, the way the Jewish year follows the lunar months, and the idea that there is the full moon is in the middle of the month, the 15th of the Hebrew month. That's when the moon is full. We have certain festivals which fall at that time, like Pesach and Sukkot. They're at the point when the moon is full. Then we have the waning of the moon, and the eve of Rosh Chodesh is understood as a point where the moon is completely hidden. And then Molad Halavana, the birth of the moon, which is the birth of the moon from the point of view of Jerusalem. From the point of view of Jerusalem, when does the moon begin to be seen as a little Nakuda, it's actually never really a Nakuda, but it refers to it in the discourse as a Nakuda, as a dot. It's actually a thin crescent in terms of us seeing it. But the idea is that it's just the first glimmer, and Kabbalistically, it's thought of as a nukuda, as a point, that it's, the moon is first of all concealed, and then there is this first glimmer of the moon, which is called the molad, the birth of the moon. In the synagogue, they announce exactly when the time of the molad will be, on the Shabbat before Rosh Chodesh, when there is the blessing of the new moon. And using an ancient tradition of timekeeping, with hours and minutes and chalakim, which are little proportions of a minute, smaller than a second, it's announced exactly when the molad will be, which is some ancient astronomical calculation.
They're phenomenally accurate, though, aren't they?
Two are very, very specific.
But even precise moments, they come up to the accuracy of very sophisticated modern science techniques. I think I've read that somewhere.
I don't know. It could be. The thing is that in general, the Jewish calendar, there's a slight slippage due to the details of the exact calculation of the length of the year. And so there is a point where the equinox, as predicted by the Jewish calendar, is slightly different from the real astronomical equinox as calculated by Moore's almanac or something. But I'm not sure whether that affects the Molad Halavana. It could be that the Molad Halavana, the birth of the new moon, remains perfectly precise. So the Rambam's laws of Kiddush HaChodesh present a way of calculating the Molad and other aspects of the calendar. So we're going to try to explore this not in astronomical terms, but basically in mystical terms, in Kabbalistic terms, and the way in which they relate to prayer, or the theme of prayer, is going to enter the discussion, and also something to do with the difference between Avraham and Yitzchak, which relates more to the Seder of the week, because otherwise there's... it doesn't mention the Seder of the week very much, but there is the idea of the special quality of Yitzchak. And it also talks a little bit about Shabbat in relation to the days of the week. Now, this is really quite a long discourse. It's from 1953, which is early in the Nisiyut, in the leadership of the Rebbe. And the discourse draws on material, as many of the Rebbe's discourses do, from the Rebbe Rashab, from one of the last discourses of the Rebbe Rashab, said in 1920. He died in 1920, Beit Nisan, on the 2nd of Nisan, and so here we have in the last, it was actually 1919 still, but it was the last year of his life. So this discourse draws on materials from that, which has got a sort of a kind of a philosophical quality, which we will try to encounter. So first of all, there's the melody of the Maimah, in order to help us to enter the realm of essence and radiance and other similar concepts that we might encounter. Yo yo ya 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 yo yo ya ya la ya la yo ya yo ho ya ya ma ya ya yo ya yo ho yir dam ba ho yir dam ba yo ha yo ya yir dam ba ya ya ho ha yir dam ba ya ya ho ha yir dam ba ya yir dam ba ho ya yam ba ya yir dam ba ha ya yam ba yir dam ba ho yam ba yo yam ba bo Lahavin inyan erev Rosh Chodesh v'Rosh Chodesh. To understand the concept of the eve of Rosh Chodesh and Rosh Chodesh itself, the Rosh Chodesh hu inyan molad halevana, because the idea of Rosh Chodesh, the new moon, it means the birth of the moon. Shebishat hamolad, that at the time of this birth, quote unquote, he binakuda, it is like a dot. Uvameshech chatzi chodesh harishon, we mitgadelet, and during the first half of the month it grows bigger. Va'achle chatzi achodesh, and after the half, the midpoint of the month, hinekshechet v'ne'elemet, it becomes smaller and decreases. Adasher be'erev Rosh Chodesh hibehelem legamrei, till on the eve of Rosh Chodesh it's completely concealed. Ubashat hamolad he can be nekuda, and then at the time of the birth of the moon, the next day, it's suddenly there again, but as a point, as a thin, very thin sliver. Hinei lahavinze. Now, in order to understand this, v'gam lahavin lama nikcha b'shem Rosh Chodesh. Why is it called? Also, to understand why it's called the head of the month. V'lo b'shem tchilat haChodesh. It's not called the beginning of the month. It's the first day of the month. Could just be called the beginning, but in fact, it's called the head. The Kmochen Hine Rosh Hashanah, similarly with the new year. Nikcha b'shem Rosh Hashanah. It's called the head of the year. V'lo b'shem Tchilat Hashanah. It's not called the beginning of the year. U'mavua b'zeh. Now, about this question of this use of the word head, it's explained the Kmosh ba'adam, just as in a person, Hine Harosh Kolel Klalut HaChayut Shel Kol Ha'Evarim. The head includes, in general, all the life force of the limbs. And then, it extends, it allows, it channels the life force to each limb. That's what the head is in relation to the physical body. Which is very, an interesting way of looking at the body, and it's looking at a kind of a spiritual structure where the spiritual life force first comes to the head and from the head flows to all the other parts of the body. If we're looking at the nervous system, that's very close to the way it's generally understood, that the power of movement in the toes is actually somewhere in the brain. Yes, and the fact that the heart beats and the lungs breathe in and expel air, also is controlled to a great extent by what is happening in the brain. So that's the concept of the head in spiritual terms. Now, this applies. So k'mochen b'Rosh Hashanah, similarly with Rosh Hashanah, with the head of the year, the new year, hine klalut ha'chayut shel kol ha'shanah kalul b'Rosh Hashanah. All the life force of the entire year is actually included in Rosh Hashanah, in the new year. Shel Rosh Hashanah kolel b'tocho klalut ha'chayut shel kol ha'shanah, v'achakach u'mamshich et ha'chayut b'pratiyot. after the energy, the life force flows afterwards, the life force flows from Rosh Hashanah, it flows in detail, the Yud Bet or Yud Gimel Chodshei Hashanah, to the 12 or sometimes in a leap year, 13 months of the Jewish year, Shahachayut Nimshach Me'aroshei Chadoshim. And in those months, in each month, the life force flows from the new moon of the month, the Rosh Chodesh, the beginning of the month, is the head of that month. So you've got the head of the year, and the head of the year is sending life force and energy to each month. So here we have the month of Kislev. So the energy, the life force reaches Kislev. Kislev has its own head, which is Rosh Chodesh Kislev, the head of the month of Kislev. And so there, the Rosh Chodesh kolel betocho, because Rosh Chodesh, the head of the month, includes in it hachayit shel kol hachodesh. It's got the life force of the entire month. After that, it spreads this life force, it extends it to each of the 30 days or so which are in the month. Some months are 29 days. But it extends it in the Hebrew year. But it extends it from the head. Because of that, it's called the head of the month and not the beginning of the month. Now here comes a question. Now we have to understand. The mitam zeh, if you're giving this reason, hare gam Shabbat, surely Shabbat hayat tzarich liot nikra, it should have been called b'shem Rosh HaShavua, it should have been called the head of the week, or something like that. Liyot d'minei mitbarachin kol yomin, there's a famous phrase in the Zohar, from Shabbat all the days are blessed. So that means the Shabbat which is there, it extends its blessing into the days of the week ahead. Now, an interesting complication with Shabbat is that Shabbat is also drawing from the days of the week before. Mm-hmm. So the days of the week before, which as it were, pour something into Shabbat, and then the Shabbat which pours blessing into the days of the week ahead. So one immediately sees that Shabbat is a little bit complicated. But nonetheless, you could say, you could focus on the idea that Shabbat pours blessing into the days of the week ahead. So according to that, it could have been, we could have called Shabbat to be, the head of the week. But in fact, we don't. So if we just skip to the end of this paragraph, the Lefiza, according to this, Einumuvan, that's four lines up from the bottom at the end of the line. Lama lo nikha Shabbat b'shem Rosh HaShavua? Why isn't Shabbat called the head of the week, like Rosh Chodesh, which is called the head of the month? Okay, so that's a question, and we'll go on to the next paragraph now. So we have basically the idea of the new moon, and the idea of the new moon being the head of the month, and the concept of the head of the year, the head of the month, and why isn't Shabbat called the head of the week? Okay, so there is a certain aspect to a maimer, to a discourse, that it begins with questions. It's a little bit, the Haggadah has questions, you know, the theme or the approach to the Haggadah, the rabbinic approach to the Haggadah, the traditional approach to the Haggadah, is to treat it as something where one asks questions. And so there's a question, then there's an answer. And Talmudic study is a process of asking a question. There's a question and then an answer. And in Chabad Hasidic thought, this process, this approach to knowledge is continued, where there's a question and an answer. It's interesting that in, let's say, the academic world, if someone's giving a paper, you know, so there's some kind of perhaps oversimplistic, you know, question which is asked, and then you give the paper and you present, you know, give the answer to the question. You know, you set up a straw man, you knock it down, and that's the process. So this question answer, it's an intriguing mode of communicating knowledge. Another mode of communicating knowledge is where there's no question. You just simply give the knowledge. Maybe the question is a way of, keeping the listener involved in some way, and they can give an alternative answer. That's one way. You could say why isn't Shabbat called the head of the week? And each person might have a different answer to that question. Okay, and then the discourse continues. In order to understand this, we have to consider the concept of light. Light. I mean, this is the, this Kabbalistic dimension of these teachings, where one suddenly moves into light. The inyan ha'or hu gilui ha'etzem. The concept of light is a revelation of the essence. Sheha'etzem hu behelem. The essence itself is concealed, is hidden. Uma shenigle hu ha'or. What is revealed is the radiance, which comes from the essence. Now that paradigm of essence and radiance is something fundamental to Chabad thought. And its concept of the relationship of existence with the divine. That there is the idea that at some point there is the hidden essence, and extending from the essence in some way is radiance, which communicates something of the essence, but there's a vast gap because the radiance is shining and the essence is hidden. It's as if just within that image, many aspects of the paradox of existence are there just in that image in itself. Now, in the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rebbe Rashab's writings, the Rebbe Rashab who passed away in 1920 and on whose discourse said not very long before he passed away, much of this is based. He could talk about this for maybe 100 pages, on essence and radiance. That's looking at it in different ways. Now the inyan ha'or hu gilui, ve'ein ze, second line, the end of the second line. Ve'ein ze sha'etzem shu'u behelem atzmo mitgale. It's not that the essence which is concealed itself is revealed. That's not what the light is. The light is not like a bit of the essence showing. Kiim sha'etzem nisha behelamo. The essence remains concealed. In its concealment. It's lovely how you can add a vav, and it's not just that it's in concealment, it's in behelamo, it's in its concealment. Eila shemeha etzem nitava heara, there comes into being a gleam of radiance. Shuhu hashba'a v'gilui el hazulat, which is a flow, a communication, a revelation to the other, to someone else. You see, this paradigm of essence and radiance has to do with the presence of some kind of other that the radiance is going to shine to and illuminate in some way. Because if there's no other, there's only the essence. And the essence doesn't need to have any radiance shining out. That's right. So the essence left to itself is just essence. So here, this touches on the whole subtlety of existence, creation. So there is the other. The word zulat means the other person, the one who is not you. Dezeu shenikra b'shem or. And that's why it is, and that is what is called radiance. We call it radiance, light, because it's that illumination, that something which comes, that communication, we could call it, which comes from the hidden essence. So it's not that the hidden essence is being revealed, but it's that the hidden essence in some way triggers off a communication to the other, and that communication is called light.
Does that imply that this hidden, the essence, the hidden essence, it has its existence only in relation to an other?
No, I'd say, go on. Only the light.
No, but the light is what is manifested from this essence, and that's what the other detects.
Right. Yeah?
But I sort of picked up from what you're saying, if there wasn't an other, another, then the essence didn't have a validity in itself. It, like,
well, the essence
be there.
I'd have thought that the essence is there anyway. Maybe the light wouldn't shine. The question, if there's no other, then there's no need for light. The essence is independent of the whole process. That's, the essence. He's going to use a few mashalim, which may help us understand it. But it's, but just at this stage, my way of understanding it is that the essence is really independent from everything else. And in itself, is not revealed at all. However, given that there is an other, something is activated by the essence so that something is revealed and communicated to the other. But it's emerging from the essence. But the essence has its own validity without any other. It reminds me of the beginning of the Rambam's Mishneh Torah, where he discusses the concept of God. And one of the only Jewish books of the Middle Ages or earlier there were one or two other, but, to focus on the concept of God and to talk about God. The Talmud mentions God on every page 20 times, but never examines the concept of God. So he says that... if you could imagine that there is no world, so then you would have just God. So there would be God without the world. On the other hand, if you would imagine that there is no God, then there's no world either. Then there's nothing else. So that's the relationship of the essence, as it were, to existence. That existence depends on God, and God doesn't depend on existence. Mm. So here we're talking about the communication between God and existence in some way. So the essence might communicate or it might not, but its existence is independent of the world that it's communicating to. Now he's giving an image, a mashal. Last two words on this page. Ukumo b'chayut ha-nefesh, like the life force from the soul, shemechayet ha-guf, which gives life to the body. Now we had before the idea of the life force in the brain, in the head, which gives life to the body. This is really an extension of the same image, because the soul dwells in the brain, and we've got this concept that there is a essence of the soul. It's maybe parallel. There's certain parallels. So we've got the essence of the soul giving life to the body. Hare etzem ha-nefesh hu chai velo b'chayim. Now the essence of the soul is living but not alive. Velo b'chayim lahachayot. It's not life which gives life, it's life itself. The soul itself is this energy of life which is higher than being communicated and channeled as life. So the essence of the soul is something beyond giving life. Kim shenimshach me'hanefesh ha'ara. It's just that there flows from the soul a gleam of radiance, which can be talked about as koach klali, koach prati, a general power, an individual power, chayut klali, chayut prati, general life force, individual life force, lahachayot et haguf, to give life to the body. Shahaguf hu zulat, because the body is other in relation to the soul. Vahashpa'a el azulat, And that flow, that communication to the other Nikra B'Shem Or is called light. I don't know if I can communicate the sense of deep meaning which is in these statements which are here in this discourse. And for the listener, you know, imagining the Rebbe saying this discourse, it would really be a transport of taking a person into a kind of another realm where these sort of very fundamental concepts at the root of all being are being defined. You know, that there is essence and there is other, and there's some kind of communication from the essence to the other, and that communication is called radiance. But it's only a gleam. Now this term, a gleam of radiance, which comes from the essence of the soul. Then he gives another example of the sun. Well, derech dugma, an example, me'or haner ve'or hashemesh. There's the light of a candle, or the light of the sun. I think he focuses on the sun. She'etzem hashemesh eino mitpashet v'chalal ha'olam. The body of the sun does not extend itself into the world. We would not be sitting here if it were. The sun is 93 million miles away. But light from the sun comes to our world. Kiim shemah shemesh nimshach he'ara levad. There flows a gleam of light from the sun. La'ayir et olam shu'u ha'or. To illuminate the world, and that gleam is what we call light. V'lachin ein ha'shemesh mutchad ba'giluyim. And therefore, since this is just a gleam, the sun is not involved in these revelations of light. D'liot asher, it's not troubled by it. It's not a bother. D'liot asher itpashtut hachayut ein ze etzem hanefesh. Since the flow of life force, which is coming from the sun, the flow of light, is not the essence of the soul, v'gam ein ze ma she'etzem mitgalen, it's not that the essence is revealed. It's just that from the essence a gleam comes into being. Now someone might say, of course, that with the sun, you know, what do you mean? The sun is a radiant orb, and so it's just we see a bit of that radiance. But the way it's looked at in these teachings is that we do not actually see the essence of the sun. Mm-hmm. What we are looking at is the sun, which is sheathed. And what is revealed to us is a radiance which is only a gleam of the sun. That the actual sun is far more than what is revealed. So this is itself part of a whole chain of teachings about the relationship of the sun to sunlight. And in Chabad teachings, it's quoted in Tanya at various places, the relationship of the light, the sunlight, to the body of the sun. And the way in which any gleam of sunlight, any shaft of sunlight, is like nothing in relation to the actual essence of the sun. V'zeu gam ken atam, ma sha'or eino poel shinui ba'etzem. The light does not affect the essence. Shela'etzem eino nogeh legamre, it makes no difference to the essence, imeh ha'or or she'eino meh, whether the light shines or doesn't shine. Now in other places in Hasidic thought, in Chabad Hasidic thought, there's a contrast made between or on the one hand, which is light, and shefa. Now shefa means flow in a more tangible way. And if one is giving this flow to the other, to the next one in the link of a chain of Shefa, which is moving down a kind of a ladder of existence, it makes a difference to the one giving the shefa whether or not the shefa is received. For example, teaching is a form of shefa. So, because teaching is a form of transmitting ideas, and the ideas are more tangible than light. So the teaching, the teacher tries to transmit the teaching. So the teaching, the instructor puts himself or herself in some way into the teaching that they're giving, and it makes a big difference to them if the student responds, if the student understands it. It's not just an automatic process. Whereas light is something else. Light is, it's just something shining, and the essence is, so to speak, almost unaware, or takes no notice of the way in which this light shines. So the light will shine equally on a beautiful palace or on a dung heap, and the light will shine equally, and it doesn't bother the emitter of the light. I don't want my light to go over there. The light goes everywhere. So we're dealing here, different forms of these spiritual kinds of communication and different images to express them. Then it gives an example from the power of the mind. And the way in which there's the power of the mind, and then the actual ideas which come into the mind. And the way we only sense the ideas. We don't sense the mind itself. You know, it might be some profound technique of self-realization where the person makes access to their own inner koach hamaskil, the power of the mind. But in itself, the power of the mind is hidden. And what we get are the ideas which are revealed on the surface of our mind, which we are able to detect. It's interesting, does Jewish thought have within it the concept of the unconscious? Because here we're saying that there's a power of mind which might be generating things that we're not aware of, and we're only aware of what is there on the conscious level. And here it uses the phrase Aval koach hamaskilu behelem, the actual power of the mind in itself is concealed, shenikra b'shem helem b'choshech. It's called concealment and darkness. Now, even though what is there in the power of the mind is actually everything which is revealed in the mind, the revealed dimension of mind, it's all there within the mind. And it's actually more within the mind than it is in the revealed dimension, but nonetheless, it is hidden and it's darkness. And so then he goes back to the earlier image. The essence of the soul, which is the essence of the life force, is a greater power of life, infinitely more than the way the life force spreads out through the body. Nonetheless, the essence of the soul, the life-giving soul, is called darkness. So, darkness and light are here taking on different connotations to, especially darkness. Darkness is a higher dimension, which is the source of light. But in itself, it is dark. Sometimes the word ma'or is used. Or, radiance, and ma'or, the source of the radiance. Although he doesn't use, I don't think he uses that word in this discourse.
Is that because the soul is not spreading out? So that's why it's dark, because we're not.
Yes.
To perceive it. It's not emitting anything.
Yes. Yeah. Ki ka'asher medabrim odot hazulat. When we are speaking about the other, v'ha'etzem hu behelem me'azulat, and the essence is concealed from the other, L'chein hine legabei hazulat, in that case, in relation to the other, nikra ha'etzem b'shem choshech, the essence is called dark. Ve'itpashtut b'shem or, and the spreading out from the essence is called light. Uvemele muvan, and so that means, shelegabei ha'etzem nikret ha'itpashtut b'shem choshech. We're now looking at it from the other way around. We are looking at it from the point of view of the other. From the point of view of the other, the world, let's say, and we're looking up towards the essence, or towards the essence. The essence is dark. We can't see the essence. But the light which is shining from the essence, that we can see, or which is generated by the essence, that we can see. But what about if we turn it round? And instead of looking from the point of view of the other, we look at it from the point of view of the essence. Let's look at those last 2.5 lines on this paragraph, on page 21. Over mele muvan, this means the other way around. Shelegabeya etzem, that in relation to the essence, nikret hitpashtut b'shem choshech. It's the spreading out of light, which is dark. Because to the essence, its own essence is light, is revealed to itself. And that which is being communicated is actually dark. Like a person who's trying to communicate something and he has an idea in his mind, but what he transmits in his communication is nothing compared with what he really wants to say. Which leads to a lot of writers to tear up their novels. Gogol, yes, who destroyed one of his books tragically at the end of his life.
Two books, I think.
Yeah.
There was the trilogy and one of them was left.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a... He wasn't the only one to do that. The idea of someone feeling that what they are trying to communicate does not work and
is less than what they want to communicate.
That's right. So that means that what they are communicating very often seems darkness. The ma'ase legabe ha'etzem hu or legabe hazulat hu choshech. That which is light for the essence, for the other, is darkness. Umashe legabe etzim uchoshech, and that which for the essence is darkness. Legabe azulat haor, for the other, it's light. Okay, well that would make a nice little spiritual fridge magnet, and might help dealing with many issues in life, because this way it's dark, and the other way it's light.
It's a bit like a two-way mirror. On the one side you see the light is coming through, but on the other side it's a reflected. You can't see through it. When you're on the dark side, you can see what's on the light side. When you're on the light side, you can't see what's on the dark side.
Yeah, but there, with the like the one-way glass, in other words.
Yeah.
But there, it's fixed. You see, if you're on this side of the one-way glass, it's always going to shine for you, or it's always going to be opaque, whichever side you're on. Whereas here, you can be wherever you are, but you can just consider it from different points of view. Because you can always adopt the point of view of the essence. And you can see that from the point of view of the essence, where I am now is dark. And there's a power to that. That's really the power of the nekuda, or the concealment of Rosh Chodesh, is that point of seeing oneself as dark. Seeing oneself as dark has a certain power. And then on the other hand, it's a deeper level of relativism, or apparent relativism, than the Zohar. The Zohar presents a very, very famous image of the world as an onion. where there are concentric shells, and each shell is either klipa, the shell of that which is inside it, and so shell signifies concealment, or it is the moach, it's the inside, compared with the shell which is outside, with the yet bigger concentric shell. So each point there, in relation to that which is outside, is good, and in relation to that which is inside, is bad. Using good and bad in very simplistic, just borrowing such a term. Whereas here, it's in relation to the same thing. The good and bad, the dark and the light, and in fact it goes beyond the words good and bad. It's dark and light, and maybe dark is better than good. Maybe dark is better than light. It's where one is in relation to the same thing, in relation to the essence. It's just which way you are considering the question. So you can be in the same place, and you're considering it in relation to the same thing, but just there are different ways of thinking about it. And those different ways of thinking about it either make you bright with radiance or dark with concealment. It's
like that famous pitgam of being the tail of the lions or the head of the wolves.
Well, the foxes.
Or the foxes.
But there, it's as if you have equal opportunities. You could try to be the tail of the lions, or you could try to be the head of the foxes. And you could decide you're going to be one or the other. And the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot is advising you, be a tail of lions rather than a head of foxes. In other words, get into the A group, even if you're the bottom of the A group, rather than be the top of the B group.
Well, beyond the Mishnah, I think that what this Pitgam is saying is that you are both of them at the same time, which is the same case here, that the radiance is light in one way and dark in another way. Yes?
I would say the words in the Mishnah could be interpreted that way. But that would be an interpretation which comes from this kind of approach rather than the literal meaning of the Mishnah. You know, one could say that you might find a discourse, one of these ma'amarim, which would take that saying and say, in fact, you're both at the same time, which is, you're able to be both at the same time. But that would be following this kind of thinking. Whereas the Mishnah, kipshuta, the simple literal sense of the Mishnah, is an either-or situation.
Yes.
You should try to be this rather than being that. You know, so, but, well, of course we can reinterpret the Mishnah, because the Mishnah is a, it's a text which has got infinite possibilities in it, and so therefore you can read many things into a phrase of the Mishnah, and then you may want to be backed up by finding some commentator who does the same thing. Luckily, so much is digitalized now. Yes, it's easier to find. Okay, next is actually another image, but you see, these images are telling us something about existence. It's telling us something about the paradigm of essence, essence and other, light and dark. But the images themselves have meaning in our way of understanding, for example, mind, and what we are, the inner mind, the power of the mind, and then the revealed mind. And now we have another concept. The relationship between thought and speech. Thought is concealed, and speech reveals. That's the whole nature of speech. It reveals to the other. Omlam legabe atzmo, but for the person himself or herself, when he or she thinks through this idea in the letters of thought, that means in the images that thought itself presents, in those letters of thought, in those formulations of thought, is the whole truth of the idea. Now that's a very interesting concept, because for many people, they have a weak and disorganized thought process. And in order to actually know what they're thinking, they have to write it down or formulate it in some way, because then they know what they are thinking, because otherwise their thoughts are extremely disorganized and have they're unruly. But these words are being taught by a figure who, you know, with other, you know, other figures of the same time, his friends, people who knew the whole Talmud by heart, people who were able to think through incredibly complicated processes of analysis of Talmudic or Kabbalistic thought, and Unhaltenkopf, as the Yiddish phrase is, holding, you know, holding head with the whole argument. You know, it's quite amazing, in fact, what 14-year-old children are supposed to learn when they learn a page of Talmud, and then there's, you know, two opinions in the Gemara, then Rashi says this, and then Tosfot said that, and then there's a comment in the, you know, the Rishonim, the earlier comment. It's you know, just the power of mind, which is expected. Now, if in that mind there is also a sense of seder, of order, and of being able to think in a organized way, one can imagine that there is a tremendous power of thought, which then the process of compressing that and extracting speech is very difficult. Rabbi Yitzchak Luria said that this is why he doesn't write. Rabbi Yitzchak Luria wrote very, very little. And he said the reason he taught orally, but he didn't write. He said he couldn't see how the broad river of machshava, of thought, could be compressed into a pen where you have to write this word and then another word. That's, he couldn't do that. He taught orally, and the eight gates of Reb Chaim Vital, his disciple, and the Tree of Life, these 10 or 12 volumes, you know, they are an expression of what he taught in 2 years. But, because for 2 years he was in Tzfat, and then he passed away. And it was in those 2 years that he communicated all these teachings that we know about. So there was communication, but he couldn't get it into the written form. He was speaking. But one can also imagine someone in whom the power of thought is so powerful, he can't put it in words either. I once had a description of this from a revered rabbi called Rabbi Weinberg. Rabbi Weinberg was the man who wrote the translation, the exposition of Tanya in the book Lessons in Tanya in English, which is available on the web from Chabad.org. One can click on Find Lessons in Tanya. The whole Tanya is there explicated by Rabbi Weinberg. Now, this was originally created as a radio program in a Yiddish radio station in New York. And he would first of all write out his explanation of that piece of Tanya that he was going to expound. I think it was an hour program. And then he would take it and show it to the Lubavitch Rebbe before it went on air. I think it was Saturday night I'm not quite sure, Saturday night, Sunday morning. And he would take it to the Rebbe before he actually said it on the radio. And he, Rabbi Weinberg, described to me, his daughter is a friend of one of my daughters, and I happened to meet him several times, thank God. And he described to me that he went to the Rebbe's house and he wanted to show him the text of what he was going to say. And the Rebbe had not yet made Havdalah, was at home with his wife, but had not yet made Havdalah. And the Rebbe wanted to tell him something about this text. And I'm not sure, but I think the way he described it, the Rebbe put one foot on a chair, which is a pose that the Kotzker Rebbe was famous for doing that as well, as a way of thinking. And he was trying to find the words to explain what he wanted to tell Rabbi Weinberg. And in the end, the Rebbe gave up. He said, it's not possible. You know, you go and read it on the radio. You know, finish. There's a comment I want to make, but I can't fit it into words. Intriguingly, in the Yiddish text and probably in the English text, although they must have had a lot of difficulty, there are many comments by the Rebbe, and in the original Yiddish, they're almost always extremely difficult to understand. it's as if to explicate that brief statement, you have to... open it up. It was Rabbi Weinberg's son who translated the whole thing into English, so I'm sure he worked hard to get those little statements in a genuine form. But that's the power of thought above speech. Now, because very often thought is treated so carelessly, people don't care what they think. If people saw thought as having as much reality as things that you display on a table when people come into the room, then we would be much more careful, or for oneself, in one's own study. So the way the books are arranged, the way the papers, files, documents, there are boxes of files. But everything is there very carefully because you need to have access to it in your computer. You know, where do you store the information about this and where do you store the information about that? But the tendency in our society is not to give so much room for thinking. You know, there's a constant chatter of different kind taking place. So, but here, so the depth of this idea that the thought is concealment and the speech is attempting to reveal to the other, however, omlam, the second line, however, the gabi atzmo, but for oneself, when he thinks the thought and the comparison of what he's thinking or she's thinking in relation to what she actually says, it's a complete world. It's a complete worlds apart. So much so that he says here, "Hu ma'alim." This is the fifth line down. "Hu ma'alim u'mastir tasechel ba'otiyot hadibur." He actually hides what he's thinking in the words of speech. What he says conceals what he's saying. It said about the Kotzker Rebbe that someone wrote down the teachings of the Kotzker Rebbe. So he showed the book to the Rebbe, and the Kotzker Rebbe said, "I didn't say anything of that." Nonsense. Someone once wrote an academic article demonstrating that most of what people have recorded about the Kotzker Rebbe are things that other people said to the Kotzker Rebbe. He was with the Kotzker Rebbe and he said this and this, and so that got written down, you know. And the Rebbe made some kind of tiny response, like a very quick response, you know, batting back. You know, so the amount of the number of statements from the Kotzker Rebbe, extremely few. Now we're going into the different worlds of the Kabbalah. And similarly, it is above the Bria Yetzira, creation and formation. Bria v'Yetzira, creation and formation. Hein machshava v'dibur. They are thought and speech. Hine Bria niklet b'shem choshech. The world of creation is called darkness, and the world of formation is called light. As it says, Yotze Or Uvore Choshech. Now, if you could please turn to the other piece of paper that I've given you. As it says, he forms light and creates darkness. Now, the first page is Yishtabach, which is a point within the morning service every day of the year, Shabbat, weekdays, Yom Kippur. There's always this Yishtabach, or something very close to it. Yishtabach Shimcha Lohad Malkeinu, may your name be praised forever, King, Almighty God, Great and Holy King in heaven and earth, etc. And we come to the end of this blessed are you, master of wonders, creator of all souls, ruler of all creatures, who takes pleasure in songs of praise. You are the only king, the life of all the worlds. Right. Then comes Kaddish, and then Baruch Hu. Baruch Hu, Es Hashem, Hamavoyroch. Whatever the situation, there's slightly different tone to the words. Bless the Lord who is blessed. Everyone said, blessed is the Lord who is blessed for all eternity. And then, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam. Blessed are you, Hashem, our God, King of the universe. Yotzer Or, let's get the wording right. Who forms light, Uvore Choshech, and creates darkness. Ose Shalom, who makes peace, Uvore et hakol, and creates everything. This is actually a quote from a verse. There's a little aleph. Yeah. Above the word yotzer, you see a little aleph, tiny aleph, above the word yotzer, and at the bottom it says, Isaiah 40, chapter 45, verse 7, b'shinui lashon, with a slight change. Because, do you know what the actual text is?
From Yeshayahu?
Yeah. Uvore et hara. Creates evil. God forms darkness and creates, God forms light and creates darkness, makes peace and creates evil. It's taken as an argument against Zoroastrianism, which says that there is a God of light and a God of darkness. By comparison, Lahabdil, God is the God both of light and of darkness, of good and of evil. Right? Because the Zoroastrian God of light is the source of good, and the God of darkness is the source of evil. Whereas God is the source of everything.
But we've been just discussing philosophically that the darkness is in fact
the higher level of godliness.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So let's just try and... So we have creation, which is Bria. I'll put it in English. Bria. Formation, which is Yetzira. Right, and at this point, Yotzer Or, that's light, is at the lower level, and darkness at the higher level. Right, at this point. And so that's in this... Now also, when one says these words, when a man says these words on a weekday, he's wearing tefillin, ideally, and when one says Yotze'or, one touches the arm tefillin, and Vorech Hoshech, and the head tefillin.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is a... that's another aspect of this light and darkness and different dimensions of spirituality. Okay, so that's why we have right. So Briya is Machshava, so we'll put that in as well. So that's thought and speech. So I'll use the same. So this is speech. And darkness is thought. Okay, so we've got the Av Shebriyahu L'mayle Mi'atzila, two lines from the end. Even though creation is higher than formation, the Yetzira hi vida yesh krik tatzura ubriya hi atchalat hayesh. Yetzira is the point where what has been created at the higher level achieves a certain form. He's speaking as if creation is Chomer and Yetzira is Tzura, which is an interesting idea for matter and form. So Bria is the beginning of existence, but nonetheless in Kabbalistic terms it's always presented as a higher realm. Whereas Chomer and Tzura is higher than Chomer. Matter and form is seen as higher than matter. Right? Form is more spiritual.
Where does it say Chomer?
Well, he doesn't. I'm putting that because he said in Yiddish, Yitzira hi videyesh krikta tzura. Atzura. Obriya hi atchalat hayesh. Yes. Yetzira means that which exists acquires a form, and Bria is the beginning of that which exists. So he doesn't actually call it Chomer, because Chomer, matter, would seem to be lower down. Mm-hmm. Chomer is the... But there is a concept, Helos, which is there in Hebrew as well. Hiyuli, in Hebrew.
Where did I see this?
Chomer ha-hiyuli.
The Rambam has this Yuli concept in the in Breshit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chomer ha-hiyuli as the beginning of existence. Yeah, well, as something very
Breshit,
subtle.
Ha'aretz tohu vavohu. At that time, he says it created the Yuli first.
That's right. That's the Yuli, helitic matter, which is beyond any kind of form, and then. Coming down lower than that, you get to the point where there is form, and it's actually defined. So that's an interesting way of seeing matter as more spiritual than form. Because normally matter is seen as lower down, and it hasn't got form, and so therefore it's something lower, it's something more material. Whereas form is like Anshei HaTzura v'Anshei HaChomer. The men of form and the men of matter. It's like the men of form are the scholars and the men of matter are the simple people. Ukmochen ita, last words on the page. And so we learn the chasher omer yotze'or, that when a person says he forms light, yemashmesh bitfilin shel yad, the man should touch his arm tfilin. And when he says, creates darkness, God creates darkness, he should touch and kiss the tefillin shel rosh, touches his hand to the tefillin and kisses his hand, or the talit could be, or the ritzuah. Some people use the ritzuah of the tefillin. They touch the tefillin with the ritzuah
Of the rosh.
Yes. Yeah. The strap of the tefillin is used. Utfillin shel rosh hu lemayla mitfillin shel yad. The head tefillin is higher spiritually than the arm tefillin. As a result, if the strap of the head tefillin gets broken and you have an arm tefillin strap from the tefillin you used to have that could be used for the tefillin shel rosh, because you can go higher. But if it's the other way round, if your arm tefillin strap gets broken and you've got a spare strap from the head tefillin, you can't use that for the arm tefillin, because you can't move down. You can't take something from a higher level of Kedusha to a lower level. So the head tefillin is higher. Now he gives another image about the spiritual quality of the head tefillin compared with the arm tefillin. The tefillin shel yad hu chotem shokea. Tefillin shel rosh hu chotem bolet. You can have a signet ring. Imagine a signet ring with your initials on it. And there are two ways that this signet ring can be made. It can be a signet ring where your initials are engraved, so they are lower than the surface of the ring. But there's another kind of signet ring where the initials are raised. The wording on the ring is raised. So this image of the signet ring often occurs in Hasidic thought and in Kabbalistic thought as an image of some kind of relationship.
It reminds me of the inscription in stone, which is lower, and the ink on paper, it's raised.
Well, the thing about the inscription of stone is that it's part of the stone. That's the essential feature. Whereas the ink on parchment can be scratched off, and then you have the parchment, and there's no trace that there
That's
was anything.
Not a difference, but I think his point is right. Usually the inscription on stone is bolet, it's tavlit. And very rarely you see the inscription inside the stone.
But why? It's much easier to make inside. You take a chisel and you dig out the letter.
True.
It's easier to make an inscription which is shakua in a stone.
It is...
What's shakua?
Indented.
Uh-huh. On the inside.
Yeah, but usually, usually the image
is... This is made by... it becomes complicated, because this is... What you're referring is made by removing. Yes? So the letters themselves are the absence of stone.
Well, in fact...
As opposed to the...
Writing.
Writing that where the letters are the stone itself.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
But in a sense, they're all made, whichever kind, you're removing stone. You're either removing the stone from the edges and outside, or you're removing inside. But it's
I've just seen on a grave. And on a grave you have usually... The
usually indented.
It's removed. It's chiseled out.
Yeah.
Yes, and very rarely you see that the spaces around the letters have been removed.
Right.
So the stone remains as the letters, and it's very, very strong to me.
Very striking.
Yes, because and I even took a picture of the.
Okay, you should also be able to take pictures of living things as well. But in terms of the imagery about stones, signet rings.
In terms of this imagery,
it's not just the image here. It's like a whole tradition of images. The signet ring is where you have Because the idea is then that with the signet ring you impress on a piece of wax. Mm-hmm. And then the wax takes on the opposite form. If it was a chotem bolet, if it was a signet ring which protrudes, it makes something which is inward within the wax. Whereas if it's the other way around, so it's a way of reversal. And that's an interesting theme in the way something which at one level has one quality, as it comes to a lower level, which is like the signet ring mm-hmm. pressing on the wax, it becomes the opposite.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying, are our thoughts pressing on the wax when they take form?
Well, that could be. Normally it's taken as something more exalted, where the transfer from one level to another is so different that it's like a signet ring in relation to the wax, where in fact the wax is totally different to the signet ring. Mm. The signet ring is made of gold and the wax is just wax. The signet ring is something which is outward and the wax is inward. So many differences, but what is being communicated are the same words. So the signet ring might be. There's another image of a diamond. Hmm. There's a beautiful image of a diamond which is carved with words, and the diamond is so bright that you cannot look at the diamond, but you can take wax and press the wax on the diamond, and then you can look at the wax and you can read the words which are on the diamond. Because the diamond in itself is too bright to see, to look at. And that's like the mitzvot. The mitzvot, which are physical actions, apparently simple physical actions, are the wax impression of this very exalted divine quality, which in itself is too bright to see. It's the powerful diamond.
I mean, you can take this again, I think, in spiritual terms, looking at Tanya, because I recall where you have the soul of a tzaddik, you could liken to a diamond, so bright, but he or she can't, like, impregnate her soul, like, imprint the soul in the other person. There's this theme, this concept of impregnation. I know that's something different, but nevertheless, this idea of the signet ring is imprinting onto something, and it's the idea of a higher level of soul imprinting on a lower level of soul in order to make the connection.
Look, that's a very interesting idea. There is a phrase in the Minor Loshen, which is the text that is said at the grave of a tzaddik. Ulfamim neshama min neshama ne'etzelet. Sometimes one neshama comes from another neshama. You know, and there in Tanya it's talking about the help which is being given to a person by the soul of a tzaddik nesting inside them in some sense. Which can make a person feel inspired, can give a person extra energy. All right, so there are these so let's just see what it says about these two kinds of signet ring. The chotem, this is the end of the second line. The chotem shokea, because the protruding signet ring, hu ha'or sheshokea umitlabesh bakelim, that represents the radiance which sinks itself and is enclosed in the vessel. Venimdat kefi ofan hakelim, and is therefore measured according to the nature of the vessel. Oh, sorry. I'm mistaken. Chotem shokea, the signet ring which is engraved. The engraved signet ring.
Embedded.
Well, it's the light which is embedded, or which is, it's the light which is able to be enclosed in the vessels and is measured according to the vessels. In other words, we're not talking here about the signet ring making an impression, but it's the way it represents light itself. So let's not take this reversal. But the fact that the signet ring is engraved, it's like the light, it represents the light which is goes into the vessel. It's the light which is measured by the vessel, the same way that the words on the signet ring are measured by the actual actual ring. They are defined by the surfaces of the ring. Whereas by contrast, Chotem Bolet, the protruding ring, who are all Shebolet Ma'akelim, it's the light which doesn't fit into the vessels. It's the light which protrudes from the vessels. Hainu Shulamaila Meklapshut Bekelim, that means it is beyond being enclosed in vessels. It's on a higher level. As it explains, Bidrushei HaTfilin, the discourses about Tfilin in Likutei Torah, Shir HaShirim, on the Song of Songs. Likutei Torah is by Rabbi Shneur Zalman, and there are many teachings on the Song of Songs. And there is a verse in the Song of Songs, Simeni Kachotam, make me into a seal. Simeni Kachotam Alibecha, make me for a seal on your heart. The woman says to the man, make me a seal on your heart. So the seal on your heart is the tefillin. That's the expression of our love for God. And there are different kinds of tefillin. There's the arm tefillin and the head tefillin. And the arm tefillin is like the engraved tefillin. And the head tefillin is the protruding tefillin, which is higher, which is the radiance which doesn't fit into the vessel. Umikiven sheba'amirat. Since with the saying of Yotze'or, Mamash Meshim B'tefillin Shel Yad, we touch and kiss the hand tefillin. Uba'amirat Borei Choshech. And when we say creates darkness. When we say he forms light, we touch the tefillin shel yad, of the arm tefillin. And when we say creates darkness, we touch the head tefillin. Harei shebriya hi lemaile miyitzira. We see creation is higher than formation. Mikol makom, nonetheless, yitzira, the lower level is called light, and briya, the higher level, is called darkness. That when the Jewish people ask, make me, that's the woman in the Song of Songs, they're asking God, make me like a signet ring, that the radiance should flow from above to below, and the flow comes through the signet ring, and there are these two dimensions of signet ring, the signet ring which sticks out, and the signet ring which is engraved. So just as the light which is drawn from above, that is, there is a light which is higher than being enclosed in vessels. That is the signet ring which protrudes. And the light which can be enclosed in vessels is the other kind of signet ring. Now he's actually talking about now he speaks about it in the way of the reversal, I think, because that which is light below, which is really at a lower level, is because it is the reverse of what is higher. So there is this reversal taking place. So there we have these two ways of looking, and from there we come to two kinds of light. We have a light which flows down, and the light which flows up. Now that's called Or Yashar, the straight light flowing down, and the Or Chozer, and the light which flows backwards. Now the word va'ahavta, let's do that on a different page. Va'ahavta, right? And you should love. So vav is 6, aleph is 1, hey is 5, bet is 2, and tuf is 400. So that comes to 7. 7 is 14. 414, right? Now or is 1, 6, 200. So light is 207. So the word you should love is twice the word for light, because there is a light which flows down and the light which flows up. There's the light of God to us and the light of our love to God. So there's God's love to us and the flow which comes from us towards God. And so in a way, more profound is this light which flows from below, which in a sense is darkness. Because that light which flows from below, that is us. And we are like the sliver of the moon, the dot of the moon, or the hiddenness of the moon. And that is us yearning to connect with the divine. So there's the radiance from above downwards and the radiance from below upwards. We've really reached the end of our time. And I'm sorry that there's much which is left to be explored in this discourse. I don't see a way of really...
Just on this pasuk that בכל לבבך ובכל נפשך is this תפילין של יד and תפילין של ראש, and then I think there is a special thing about בכל מאודיך.
There is, but not here.
The next thing, two paragraphs later, is בכל לבבך ובכל נפשך, and not doesn't say בכל מאודיך.
One second, on which page?
Hey, there in this page. Look at the last line.
Where?
The bottom line.
On page 22.
On page 46.
46. Oh, that's in the Shema, obviously. Yeah, but the discourse does not discuss that aspect of it over here. What it does discuss is the idea of va'ahavta
being twice or.
Yeah, and the idea that we have to love. How do we get to the love? It's through the hitbonanut in the word Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and what that means. It gives a rather novel interpretation, but which includes considering a radiance which is beyond Hishtar Shalut. And through
nothing,
that come
nothing
it doesn't effect. In this discourse it doesn't go
is the tefillin shel yad, lenafshecha, the tefillin shel rosh. That's where they are.
That's an interesting point, but it doesn't explore it in this discourse. It's true that the tefillin is on the arm near the heart.
And the other one is on the head near the nefesh.
Yes, although that correspondence is not so often pointed out. It's, listen, there are infinite explanations. But what I think maybe let's just let's finish the paragraph that we're on page 22. Let's try to finish that carefully and then, you know, we will just have to say that there is more in the discourse. Let's so if we begin Sham Shachai Alidei Achotem, the flow comes from the signet ring. Chotem Bolet v'chotem Shokea. The signet.
Where are you reading this?
Chotem Bolet is the end of the line.
Yes, I.
Right, eight lines down.
Yeah.
The signet ring which protrudes and the signet ring which is engraved. Hinei kamo sha'or nimshach milamayla. The way that the light is drawn down from above. Hinei ha'or shalamayla mihtrapshut. That radiance which is higher than being enclosed in vessels is called the chotem bolet. It's called the signet ring which protrudes, which is biblita. It protrudes. Uma shemitlabeshu shokea. And the radiance which can be enclosed in the world, the realms of the downchaining of worlds, that is the ring which is engraved. Aval gabe lemata, but in relation to below, nikra yitzira b'shem or formation. The world of formation is called light. Ubriya b'shem choshech, and creation is called darkness. So, in other words, we're looking at it here from the point of view of below. That which is easier, as it were, is light, and that which is beyond is dark. Whereas really, this is the light. Thing which is protruding, like karan or panav, like the shining rays of light. It's just that it's such a deep light, it's like darkness for us below. And so, v'hine liyot sha'or legabe lemayla hu choshech. Since light, in relation to that which is above, is darkness. V'chol inyan ha'or hu rak hashpa'a lazulat. And the whole meaning of light is the communication to the other. Therefore, the light is called tov v'chesed, goodness and kindness. As it says, God saw the light that it's good. And goodness and kindness, that is one concept, as it says in another verse, Tov v'chesed yedefuni, goodness and kindness pursue me. And the reason is, because every aspect of light is the flow, the communication to the other, and that flow and communication to the other is because of the goodness of the divine. And it's the nature of goodness to do good. Now, since the reason for the goodness and light, the goodness and kindness, is love, that this love is the inwardness of the goodness and kindness, as it says, Avas Olam Avtich, I love you with an eternal love, Al Kein Meshachti Chesed, and therefore I'm giving you, God says, I'm pouring to you kindness. Therefore the light is also called Ahava. Love is called, light is called love. Because the word va'ahavta, and you should love, in Gematria, is twice the word or, the word radiance. And the word, and radiance, there are two kinds of radiance. The radiance which flows down, and the radiance which flows up. And one is a radiance which is seen as light, and the other one is a radiance which has the quality of darkness. And, it follows through this. It talks about the difference between Avraham and Yitzchak. Avraham is a flow from above downwards, while Yitzchak is from below upwards. The Shabbat, it asks the question about Shabbat. Why is Shabbat not called the head of the week? Because Shabbat is beyond. Shabbat is a point beyond. We go through the week and then we come to Shabbat. We're on a point beyond. From that point beyond, we reach down into the next days of the week, and blessing comes from Shabbat, but we don't call Shabbat the head, because Shabbat is like in another dimension altogether. Rosh Chodesh is the first of the month, and it's day number 1, 2, 3. It's part of the month, where Shabbat is beyond. Shabbat is on another measure. And then begins creation again. Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, Sunday, Monday, like the first Sunday, the first Monday in existence. It all happens again. So, listen, we have scratched the surface of a very, very beautiful discourse, but we've looked at a little bit of it, and with the help of Hashem, one day we will explore more. But that is from 5714, 1953. a beautiful discourse. Thank you. Yeah.